Welcome to Begin With Yes with Paul Boynton on Empower Radio, a show to help you create and embrace real personal change. You can overcome the challenges in front of you. You just begin with yes. Here's your host, Paul Boynton.
Hey, thank you, Brent. This is Paul Boynton, and you are listening to Begin With Yes on Empower Radio. Begin With Yes is about that magical space where the law of attraction and the law of action join forces to empower us to make good things happen in our lives, starting right now. And joining forces with us right now is Mary Simaluka, who is a CEO of Noetic Films and Mondo Digital Solutions. Mary is an entrepreneur, a professional speaker, a radio talk show host herself, and a mentor to young people around the world. Having survived what she calls serial life challenges, Mary found herself on a quest in search for new meaning and a new life's purpose. Relocating to California in 2009, over 3,000 miles away from friends and families to begin a new life in the sunshine of California, her path crossed with a filmmaker who she'll be telling us about as we spoke. This friendship led to the creation of Noetic Films, formed to produce and distribute films with depth, meaning, and substance. And you're going to find out more about that too. So right now, we're going to talk about Mary's quest and your quest, knowing from personal experiences that that path can have unexpected twists and turns and isn't always smooth sailing either. If you're with us live, we welcome your calls and emails. The number to call is 248-809-3474, or you can email us at beginwithyes@comcast.net. Let's get to it. Welcome, Mary.
Hi, Paul. How are you today?
I am doing great. How are things on the West Coast?
Oh, well, you know, it's almost embarrassing because every time somebody asks us, I live in Laguna Beach, California, and it's one boring, beautiful day after the other.
Don't you just get sick of it?
Well, actually, you know, it's strange because I moved out here from the East, as you said in the introduction, and it is weird not to have, you know, the seasons and the changes because we almost have nothing to complain about.
Oh, you
and
can
who
think
doesn't
of something.
Want that once in a while, right?
That's right. You still get that southern drawl, though.
Oh yeah. Well, I moved away from my home, which was in North Carolina, in 1977, and moved to D.C. But I never got rid of my southern accent for some reason. It just doesn't go away.
That's good. I like it. I can feel, you know, hear a little bit of crackling on the line, and I'm wondering if that's the electricity you and I generate whenever we hook up with each other.
Maybe so, but I hope it's not too annoying for our listeners.
You know, Cheryl Maloney, who has a wonderful Facebook page called Simple Steps Real Change, I think she was the one that introduced us, and you and I became fast friends. And I know lots of people are doing internet dating, but what do you think about internet friending?
I think it's fantastic. You know, since I've been involved in the social media world, which is new for me, probably I've only been involved in it 2 years since the film released, but I am friends with people all over the world that I never would have met ordinarily. I mean, I can't thank Mark Zuckerberg enough for Facebook.
It really is amazing. And I think some people, you know, I hear people complain about those relationships are not real, but at least my experience is you meet some incredible people and you really form really close, meaningful, significant friendships.
Right. And you mentioned Cheryl, and I know there's another friend of ours that we've met through Facebook, Michael Merritt. The three of us are going to meet up this week in L.A.
Oh, that's amazing. So you do.
In person.
And I know you keep doing that with people that you meet on Facebook, so I think that's wonderful. Mary, in your bio, and I mentioned it when I introduced you, you talked about serial life challenges, and I've never heard that expression before. What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, Paul, we all have our zero to hero story if we're lucky enough to survive the zero part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the wonderful things about your book. It empowers people. It gives people the hope that you can take that first step out of the ditch. You can, you know, find out where to go next, even if it's a small step. But what happened to me was I was born in a relatively modest middle-class family in the South, and we worked hard and we played by the rules. And my parents were very, very hard workers. And my mother had 11 pregnancies, and there were 8 dead babies. two with cerebral palsy, and I'm the only normal one, if you can call me normal. But so I was baby number five, so I witnessed a lot of the sadness and the discussions about the, you know, the other babies. And then when I was 12 years old, when the children came along, started to come along who had the cerebral palsy. And so I was only home 4 more years because I went to school early when I was 16. But I stayed close to home and helped my parents because that that gift, as my mother would call it, of the children changed their lives forever. Because my little brother is total care. He still is. They said he would never live to be over 5, and now he's 36. And he's never held up his head. He's never chewed a bit of food. But you know what? He's the happiest kid in the world. He thinks he's in the world to eat ice cream and watch Captain Kangaroo. He doesn't know any different. He doesn't know the pain of being handicapped because all he's ever been surrounded with is love. Now, my sister, on the other hand, is a little bit different because she had just cerebral palsy from the waist down. And she knew the pain of it all. She knew the falling down and being made fun of. And she went through 16 operations on her legs and casts and braces and this. So my first challenge started early with the family because I had to help my parents along, as you might imagine.
I can imagine that. Are your parents still alive, Mary?
No, they passed away early on. And my little brother is in a private group home where they only have 15 children just like him. And I left him in North Carolina and signed over his guardianship after my parents died for the specific reason that I come from a huge family with a lot of aunts and uncles and cousins and people there, and I'm the only one who ever left the state. So he has more company and more friends than I do. And if I would have started dragging him around the country with me, that would have been really traumatic for him. So he's very happy and all is well there. But, my parents left early.
When you decided to move to California, I mean, were things going well for you? Were things not going well for you? Were you looking to move to get to a better place? Or what was that move all about?
Well, you know, when I start to tell this story, I almost can't believe it's my life. But here's what happened. I went through college. I met the man of my dreams. I moved to D.C. I worked. And for the years of my marriage, everything was just peachy king up until the point where I started to lose people in my life. And because of some of the challenges we had growing up, our whole family was very, very close. So I lost my grandmother first, then my father, then my mother, then my college roommate, and to death. And all of these were difficult challenges. But my husband was always around to help. And so even though I went into what the doctors all call protracted grief state, my husband was there to sort of pick up the pieces and everything. Well, then he developed cancer, stage 4. And for 4 years, we fought that and lost the battle, unfortunately. And so I lost my husband in 1997. But through all of that, for 36 years, this is the fast version of the whole thing. My best friend, who I'd met when I moved to D.C., was Paula Cronin. And Paula and I always support each other no matter what. So after I lost my husband, I ran into a really seriously clinically depressed state. Wouldn't go out of my house for 3 years, wouldn't do anything but cook and eat, cry, take medication, really almost suicidal. And finally one day I decided I've got to do something or I'm going to die here. And so Paula came over and we took that first step, as you would say. We got out of the house and I went for a walk and then suddenly got back into life for a couple of years. And then things were going along pretty well. I had signed my business over for somebody to run who ran it almost into the ground, lost 10 of our biggest clients. And when I came back into myself, as I call it, I was $175,000 in debt anyway, make a long story short there, Paula was still in my life. So then her husband got diagnosed with cancer. And I'm like, really, God? I mean, how many of these deaths are we going to have to survive? So I started helping her, support her through all this trauma. And then one day, I talked to her about 10:30 at night when he was terminal. And she was living in Georgia. And I said, I'm going to give you a call tomorrow morning because you sound terrible. She said, I'm going to get some sleep. Don't call me. I'll call you because I'm going to take, you know, a sleeping pill and I'm going to bed. I haven't had any sleep in 6 days. I said, okay, well, I'll call you when I get up. Well, instead of that, when the phone rang the next day, it was someone telling me that she and her husband had been murdered in their home by their own stepdaughter and son-in-law. And Paul, I just sat there and started screaming. So now I've lost my grandmother, my mother, my father, my husband, and now the girl who is most like a sister to me in this world, my dearest and last friend in the world, Paula. And I thought, oh, I can't live with this. And so I went down to Georgia, went through her funeral, went through the whole thing, and it could go on forever with that story, but I won't belabor that. And I came back to the house, and I called my friend who is a psychiatrist, and I said, well, I'm not going back on any kind of medication, so what am I going to do? He said, well, the first thing you need to do is to take down, look around your house, see how many pictures of live people are on the walls, and if there are none, take all the pictures down and start to find new friends.
You know, Mary, I've heard parts of that story before, but this is the first time that I've sort of heard the whole sequence of events. And I so appreciate you sharing that, because I think so many times people think that people who are optimistic or who are hopeful or who do look forward sincerely to their lives and making things happen have had easy lives. And this, frankly, is one of the most difficult or challenging stories I've heard in a real long time.
Well, and it's funny you say that, because not too long ago somebody said to me, well, you don't understand how I'm feeling, because you probably never had an unhappy day in your whole friggin' life. All right. You're so happy all the time. And I thought, well, you might be surprised.
I'm sure they would. Do you feel like even through those difficult times that you had a sense for where you were heading and what would become of you? Or did you just...
No, I didn't.
You didn't.
I actually laid on the floor at one point. I had this beautiful apartment that I had decorated to the nines, and just like I wanted, a beautiful condo overlooking the White House and the Pentagon and, you know, the Capitol building in D.C. I was on the 10th floor, and I decorated it. Any of my friends listening will recognize this clearly. I decorated it in all pink because that was my favorite color. And after my husband died, I realized I've never decorated a house or a condo or anything just for me. So I did it in all my own colors. I made it as frilly and feminine and pink as I had pink marble in the kitchen, pink Corian as a backsplash. I mean, it was ridiculous. So I got so depressed one day, I just laid down the middle of my pink marble floor in the kitchen. And this is a great story. And I'm laying there, and I've got my arms out like a cross. I'm like, okay, God, beam me up, please. I cannot live like this. You've got to send me an angel. You've got to send me some kind of sign to figure out where to go. Well, at that very moment, the doorbell rang. I get up, and I'm still in my pajamas, which was my usual state, dirty pajamas, not taking a bath. I mean, it was ridiculous. I was so depressed, I just could not drag myself out of the house. And I went to the door, and there was the UPS guy there. And I said, hello. And he said, I have a package for you from Springfield, Missouri. And I said, well, I don't know anybody in Springfield, Missouri. He said, well, apparently you know this lady named Isabel McClellan because she sent you a package. Well, I did remember her when he said her name, because 4 or 5 years before that, Paula and I had gone with my friend Doris on a trip to St. Louis. And we took a driving tour out into the country. We ran across this antique shop, and she had the most beautiful things there. And there was a seashell that I took note of while I was there, a huge, what do you call those, conch shells, I guess?
Yep.
And somebody had engraved in that a white angel, and it was pink. And she sent me that, and it came that very day that I was laying in the middle of my kitchen floor begging for an angel. And I had not talked to this woman in years, but she said she was closing her shop, and she remembered, her note said she was closing her shop, and she remembered how much I had admired that.
I think that
it would do me more good than her. Can you believe that? So I call that the day of the
angel. Mary, I think you're... Mary, you're going in and out a little tiny bit, but hopefully we haven't lost you. And are you still there, Mary?
Yes. Did you hear the angel story?
We really did. And now I want you to fast forward to this incredible sort of change in your life, because now you're the CEO of two companies. You're a film producer, which seems like it must have been kind of unexpected. How did that come about?
Well, the day of the angel, I decided I have to do something to get my life back on track. This is a sign from God. So I started looking for places where I could live in the sunshine. I have serious lung disease too, but I don't want to even go into all that. So I need to be between two potential lung transplant centers. And so I was looking for the best place in a warm climate close to a lung transplant center. And I searched the internet until I found Laguna Beach. And it's halfway between UCLA and UCSD, and both have big lung centers, and it has the climate that I need for my lung problem. So I moved out here, just picked up and moved. And I always had my other company, the recording company, Mondo Digital Solutions. We record large conferences, and at one of these conferences, God sent me Alexander Vesely, Dr. Frankel's grandson. And Alex jokes that just when I think things couldn't have gotten any worse, God sent me him. But, of course, he's the blessing. I tell the Franco family all the time now, it's like I was drowning in a vat of mud and got lifted out into a vat of sunshine with warmth coming in from all over the world now.
And isn't it kind of remarkable that, you know, I often talk to people and write and speak about taking those very small steps. And your first very small step was just to get online and look for a warm climate between a couple of medical facilities. And and then from that step became another step and another step and another step. And that's how these things happen, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to make, Dr. Frankel talked a lot about this, making the decision to do something different. And you talk about that too in your book. Just begin with yes. Just get up and make one decision. I don't care if it's get out of bed today. Right. That could be a decision that's just for today or just for this week. You've got to start.
Yeah, and, you know, as I'm listening to you sort of express something that I believe so strongly, sometimes those really small steps, like I'm going to get out of bed today and get dressed, which for some people are really, really big steps, sometimes those are the steps that we look back on and recognize were the turning points in our lives.
Right. I mean, I just told you I was laying in the middle of my floor, dirty, hadn't had a bath in 5 days, refused to take baths, didn't care if I ever combed my hair again or not, begging for God to beam me up or send me an angel. And from that step, I moved here. And then I met one of my client groups is another wonderful organization called the Milton Erickson Foundation. And they put on, Dr. Milton Erickson was the founder of modern hypnosis in this country, and they put on the biggest hypnosis conference based on Ericksonian philosophies in the world. And he was sort of an American genius who was a contemporary of Dr. Viktor Frankl. And I had no idea, but they're one of our educational client groups. And so I was at that meeting in San Diego. We were really busy, and this kid was running around with the camera. I say kid. He's no kid. He's 37 years old, but to me, a kid. So he was running around taking interviews of people, high-level psychiatrists and everything, and I had no idea who he was. But we became friends, and he was sort of hanging out with our crew between shots. And, you know, we were cutting up and playing. And then at the end of the conference, 5 days later, I'm in the hotel coffee shop having dinner. And Alexander came over to sit with me for dinner, and he was talking, you know, just, I'm from Vienna and this and that. I had no idea who he was still. His name's Alexander Vesely, the filmmaker. And suddenly, people started coming up to the table and saying, oh, Alex, I'm so honored to meet you. Oh, thank you for coming. Hi, big name psychiatry people. Oh, Alex. And there was about five or six of them. Finally, I'm getting the message. Wait a minute now. This is something different going on here. Not some ordinary kid with a camera. So I said, okay, tell me who you are really. And he laughed. He's very, very humble and very, very wonderful person. And he said, oh, I'm nobody. They just want information about my grandfather. So I said, okay, I'll buy you. Who's your grandfather? And he said, Viktor Frankl. I said, shut up. I was married to Elvis. I thought it was not true. And he spent like 15 minutes convincing me it was real, that he is the grandson of Viktor Frankl. And so that's what he was doing there, interviewing people for the documentary, which is, at that time was going to be nothing more than an archive project. And so he and I decided to take it a step further, and we have now taken it miles further and turned it into a world-class documentary that has won 5 major film awards, for which we are very, very grateful. And we're just about to release it to the public.
I was just going to ask you that. How can people find out more about it? You have a website that people can go to?
We do. We're very proud of our website. It's www.victorandimovie.com, and it's spelled VIKTORandimovie.com. And our radio audience and our Facebook friends are the only people who can buy the film right now, because we're releasing the director's cut, and because we're still cleaning up the subtitles and stuff in Hollywood for a worldwide release. But you can go there. You can read all about the life of the amazing person, Dr. Viktor Frankl. You can read about the director and the filmmaker, Alexander Vesely. And we have some never-before photos on there. It's just a wonderful, wonderful website. So it's victorandimovie.com.
You know, I think the most important thing, and I think the probably one of the greatest gifts that you've offered people today, is being willing to share so honestly about some of the more difficult or challenging times. You've come a long way from a person laying on the floor screaming to having becoming a producer of a film and the CEO of a film production company, and now getting ready to see your film released. And I think that that you must have a special empathy for other people to be willing to share so freely. Am I right?
I do have a special empathy for other people. You know, and that's in my pre-misery days. I was always mentoring and developing young people. I've taken 18 people under my wing and mentored them financially and psychologically and spiritually in every other way that I could, using my gifts as an entrepreneur and helping them develop a business. I had 4 women who came out of prisons, and I brought them on a work release program first into my company in D.C., and trained them to do jobs ranging from duplicating tapes in those days all the way to answering phones, becoming a graphic designer. I've got one who became a television producer now for country music television. I've got one country singer that I mentored for 5 years that's now about to really break out big time. It's a labor of love. And I don't have any children of my own, but I have a lot of employees, and I have a lot of mentees out there. So I call myself a nurturer and a connector.
You know, Mary, we've talked in the past about the ripple effect, and certainly you mentoring people and helping them get on their feet or developing some skills or even helping them financially get going. Those are kind of big gifts, but the ripple effect of just connecting with people, smiling at people, giving someone an encouraging word can make a huge difference, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't have to be anything big. I mean, I had a really small business with only 23 employees, and we did not have any extra money. And we always had a rule that, and we still do, that if we're going to hire another person, everybody in the company has to vote on that person because we all have to live together every day. And so when I started bringing these ladies in from the women's prison, you can imagine that that wasn't a popular decision necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't always work. I mean, let's face it, it's not a Roseland. I mean, I've had one of the ladies that we brought in, and she stayed there for a year. Turned out she had embezzled almost $3,000 from us through the credit card, you know, machine. And it took us a long time to find that out and get it solved. And so, you know, you can't get disappointed in people. You can only look forward with them, not backward. And one of the things that I noticed that I heard the other day, just excuse me, Paul, let me tell you this before I forget.
Sure.
Somebody told me that the reason they make car windshields in the front much bigger is because there's not that much to see in the back.
You've
got to always look forward.
And ironically, most of us spend so much time looking backwards. You know, we've gotten several email questions, Mary, which I'm going to forward to you. But there's one, and we just have less than a minute to go. But this person is saying, you know, are you sure that everyone has a passion? She just has no idea what her passion is. And do you believe in your heart that everybody does have a passion?
Absolutely. Yeah, everybody's got a book in them, and everybody's got a passion. And, if it's not, I saw a movie yesterday called Sarah's Key, and one of the lines in there was, if the story's not told, it goes unnoticed.
Well, you know, Mary, we're out of time, but your story certainly has not gone unnoticed. Thank you so much for being our guest here today.
Thank you, Paul.
Keep talking, and you keep doing what you're doing. Thank you all for being with us on Begin With Yes. We will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
People have all kinds of excuses for not saving energy. I didn't plug it in. I'll turn it off later. It's not my music. It's just one phone charger. So we don't have those Energy Star appliances. So that old window leaks. How much energy and money could the new ones really save? Maybe it's time to stop making excuses and start doing some simple things to save the energy and resources we can.
'Cause a little here and a little there can add up to a lot later, and you just never know what people will need in the future. My name is
Sarah, and I'm going to get started today.
We can all help save more energy for tomorrow. What's your excuse? For more energy-saving tips that also save money, visit loseyourexcuse.gov/parents. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy, the Ad Council, and this station.